Chapter 110. Mentioned. A languid cousin with a mustache in a state of extreme debility now observes from his couch, that man told him Yazdi that Tulkinghorn had gone down T, that iron place T give legal opinion about something, and that contest being over T day, told me highly jolly thing, if Tulkinghorn should pair with news, that Koodle man was floored. Mercury in attendance with coffee informs Sir Leicester, hereupon, that Mr. Tulkinghorn has arrived, and is taking dinner. My lady turns her head inward for the moment, then looks out again as before. Volumnia is charmed to hear that her delight has come. He is so original, such a stolid creature, such an immense being for knowing all sorts of things, and never telling them. Volumnia is persuaded that he must be a Freemason. Is sure he is at the head of a lodge, and wears short aprons, and is made a perfect idol of with candlesticks and trowels. These lively remarks the fair Deadlock delivers in her youthful manner, while making a purse. He has not been here once, she adds, since I came. I really had some thoughts of breaking my heart for the inconstant creature. I had almost made up my mind that he was dead. It may be the gathering gloom of evening, or it may be the darker gloom within herself, but a shade is on my lady's face, as if she thought, I would he were. Mr. Tulkinghorn, says Sir Leicester, is always welcome here and always discreet wheresoever he is. A very valuable person, and deservedly respected. The debilitated cousin supposes he is enormously rich Fleur. He has a stake in the country, says Sir Leicester, I have no doubt. He is, of course, handsomely paid, and he associates almost on a footing of equality with the highest society. Everybody starts. For a gun is fired close by. Good gracious, what's that? Cries Volumnia with her little withered scream. A rat, says my lady. And they have shot him. Enter Mr. Tulkinghorn, followed by Mercury's with lamps and candles. No, no, says Sir Leicester, I think not. My lady, do you object to the twilight? On the contrary, my lady prefers it. Volumnia? Oh, nothing is so delicious to Volumnia as to sit and talk in the dark. Then take them away, says Sir Leicester. Tulkinghorn, I beg your pardon. How do you do? Mr. Tulkinghorn with his usual leisurely ease advances, renders his passing homage to my lady, shakes Sir Leicester's hand, and subsides into the chair proper to him, when he has anything to communicate, on the opposite side of the baronet's little newspaper table. Sir Leicester is apprehensive that my lady, not being very well, will take cold at that open window. My lady is obliged to him, but would rather sit there for the air. Sir Leicester rises, adjusts her scarf about her, and returns to his seat. Mr. Tulkinghorn in the meanwhile takes a pinch of snuff. Now, says Sir Leicester, how has that contest gone? Oh, hollow from the beginning. Not a chance. They have brought in both their people. You are beaten out of all reason. 3-1. It is a part of Mr. Tulkinghorn's policy and mastery to have no political opinions. Indeed, no opinions. Therefore he says you are beaten, and not we. Sir Leicester is majestically wroth. Volumnia never heard of such a thing. The debilitated cousin holds that it's sort of thing that's sure taps long's votes give mob. It's the place, you know, Mr. Tulkinghorn goes on to say in the fast-increasing darkness, when there is silence again, where they wanted to put up Mrs. Rouncewell's son. A proposal which, as you correctly informed me at the time, he had the becoming taste and perception, observed Sir Leicester, to decline. I cannot say that I by any means approve of the sentiments expressed by Mr. Rouncewell when he was here for some half hour in this room, but there was a sense of propriety in his decision which I am glad to acknowledge. Ha! Says Mr. Tulkinghorn. It did not prevent him from being very active in this election, though. Sir Leicester is distinctly heard to gasp before speaking. Did I understand you? Did you say that Mr. Rouncewell had been very active in this election? Uncommonly active. Against, oh, dear yes, against you. He is a very good speaker. Plain and emphatic. He made a damaging effect, and has great influence. In the business part of the proceedings he carried all before him. It is evident to the whole company, though nobody can see him, that Sir Leicester is staring majestically. And he was much assisted, says Mr. Tulkinghorn as they wind up, by his son. By his son, sir? Repeats Sir Leicester with awful politeness. By his son. The son who wished to marry the young woman in my lady's service? That son. He has but one. Then upon my honor, says Sir Leicester after a terrific pause during which he has been heard to snort, and felt to stare, then upon my honor, upon my life, upon my reputation and principles, the floodgates of society are burst open, and the waters of A obliterated the landmarks of the framework of the cohesion by which things are held together. General burst of cousinly indignation. Volumnia thinks it is really high time, you know, for somebody in power to step in, and do something strong. Debilitated cousin thinks country's going Davely steeplechase pace. I beg, says Sir Leicester in a breathless condition, that we may not comment further on this circumstance. Comment is superfluous. My lady, let me suggest in reference to that young woman, I have no intention, observes my lady from her window in a low but decided tone, of parting with her. That was not my meaning, returns Sir Leicester. I am glad to hear you say so. I would suggest that as you think her worthy of your patronage, you should exert your influence, to keep her from these dangerous hands. You might show her what violence would be done in such association to her duties and principles, and you might preserve her for a better fate. You might point out to her that she probably would, in good time, find a husband at Chesney Wold by whom she would not be Sir Leicester at, after a moment's consideration, dragged from the altars of her forefathers. These remarks he offers with his unvarying politeness and deference, when he addresses himself to his wife. She merely moves her head in reply. The moon is rising, and where she sits there is a little stream of cold pale light, in which her head is seen. It is worthy of remark, says Mr. Tulkinghorn, however, that these people are, in their way, very proud. Proud? Sir Leicester doubts his hearing. I should not be surprised if they all voluntarily abandoned the girl, yes, lover and all, instead of her abandoning them, supposing she remained at Chesney Wold under such circumstances. Well, says Sir Leicester tremulously. Well, you should know, Mr. Tulkinghorn. You have been among them. Really, Sir Leicester, returns the lawyer, I state the fact. Why, I could tell you a story with Lady Dedlock's permission. Her head concedes it, and Volumnia is enchanted. A story. Oh, he is going to tell something at last. A ghost in it, Volumnia hopes. No. Real flesh and blood. Mr. Tulkinghorn stops for an instant, and repeats with some little emphasis grafted upon his usual monotony, real flesh and blood, Miss Dedlock. Sir Leicester, these particulars have only lately become known to me. They are very brief. They exemplify what I have said. I suppress names for the present. Lady Dedlock will not think me ill-bred, I hope. By the light of the fire, which is low, he can be seen looking towards the moonlight. By the light of the moon Lady Dedlock can be seen, perfect fly still. A townsman of this Mrs. Rouncewell, a man in exactly parallel circumstances as I am told, had the good fortune to have a daughter who attracted the notice of a great lady. I speak of really a great lady, not merely great to him, but married to a gentleman of your condition, Sir Leicester. Sir Leicester condescendingly says, yes, Mr. Tulkinghorn, implying that then she must have appeared of very considerable moral dimensions indeed in the eyes of an iron master. The lady was wealthy and beautiful, and had a liking for the girl, and treated her with great kindness, and kept her always near her. Now this lady preserved a secret under all her greatness, which she had preserved for many years. In fact, she had in early life been engaged to marry a young Reiki was a captain in the army, nothing connected with whom came to any good. She never did marry him, but she gave birth to a child, of which he was the father. By the light of the fire he can be seen looking towards the moonlight. By the moonlight, Lady Dedlock can be seen in profile, perfectly still. The captain in the army being dead, she believed herself safe. But a train of circumstances with which I need not trouble you led to discovery. As I received the story, they began in an imprudence on her own part one day, when she was taken by surprise, which shows how difficult it is for the firmest of us. She was very firm, to be always guarded. There was great domestic trouble and amazement, you may suppose. I leave you to imagine, Sir Leicester, the husband's grief. But that is not the present point. When Mr. Rouncewell's townsman heard of the disclosure, he no more allowed the girl to be patronized and honored than he would have suffered her to be trodden underfoot before his eyes. Such was his pride, that he indignantly took her away, as if from reproach and disgrace. He had no sense of the honor done him and his daughter by the lady's condescension, not the least. He resented the girl's position, as if the lady had been the commonest of commoners. That is the story. I hope Lady Dedlock will excuse its painful nature. There are various opinions on the merits, more or less conflicting with Volumnia's. That fair young creature cannot believe there ever was any such lady, and rejects the whole history on the threshold. The majority incline to the debilitated cousin sentiment, which is in few words, no business Rouncewell's fernal townsman. Sir Leicester generally refers back in his mind to Wat Tyler, and arranges a sequence of events on a plan of his own. There is not much conversation in all, for late hours have been kept at Chesney Wold since the necessary expenses elsewhere began, and this is the first night in many on which the family have been alone. It is past 10, when Sir Leicester begs Mr. Tulkinghorn to ring for candles. Then the stream of moonlight is swelled into a lake, and then Lady Dedlock for the first time moves, and rises, and comes forward to a table for a glass of water. Winking cousins, bat-like in the candle glare, crowd round to give it. Volumnia, always ready for something better, if procurable, takes another, a very mild sip of which contents her. Lady Dedlock, graceful, self-possessed, looked after by admiring eyes, passes away slowly down the long perspective by the side of that nymph, not at all improving her as a question of contrast. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.